Okay, so we're about halfway through our winter retreat. Been trying to keep on the theme of four foundations of mindfulness. And it, of course, four foundations of mindfulness are, that's a pretty broad theme, overarching theme to explore, as there's so many ways of applying it and investigating it. And just as we began the evening with the chanting of the discourse on the mindfulness of breathing, that's the Buddha is quite explicit that it's a mindfulness of breathing fulfills the four foundations of mindfulness. Of course, in the four foundations of mindfulness, fulfill the seven factors of awakening. So I'd say it's as we explore these foundations of mindfulness and start to recognize that this is applying mindfulness, it's a complete path leading to the, and it's something the Buddha is quite explicit with as well. This is a complete path for the ending of all dukkha, of all suffering, of all limitation. So that as we continue the retreat, and just to be seeing how we can be applying these aspects of our practice and our training. I think it's helpful to keep one is paying attention to the details of mindfulness or of training or of meditation or of cultivating the path, but also keeping an eye on the goal as well. And that looking toward the how do we free the mind from its limitation, because in the same way that we entrap ourselves with our attachments and clinging and delusions about the world, about ourselves. You know, we do this. We can do the same thing with the practice. Even make meditation an obsession, and so you're always wanting to be keeping in mind the ending of suffering. How do I? Well, what am I creating suffering under? Because we're great at creating cages for ourselves. So it's like even if you have a pet bird or something, you make a really beautiful cage for it, and it really doesn't matter how beautiful the cage is. The bird doesn't really want to be in that cage. So that same with ourselves. I mean, the aspects of the world and the sense of identity with self can go to trap us. It doesn't really matter how exalted it is. It's still a cage. And similarly with the practice itself. The meditation, we can just keep repeating trying to perfect the meditation without really paying attention to what's the purpose, what's the goal, what am I really trying to experience here. So it's just as a point of reflection and investigation to be paying attention. It's like Ajahn Chah. He was a great practitioner. He was a great meditation, great teacher. I remember one of the things him saying, sort of like in Thai, "Sangop mai sangop taugan, raka taugan." Sort of like it's peaceful, it's not peaceful, same value. And he's sort of like, "What do you mean, same value? I want my peaceful states of mind, I want to get those meditation experiences. I want to have all, you know, and it's the, but for Ajahn Chah, what was important is being able to learn from all of our experience, because the reality is, you know, in our practice, if we're committed to it, and you know, we're going to experience times when the mind does become peaceful. We're going to experience times when the mind is not peaceful, and for all the effort we put in, or all of the great teachings we're listening to and contemplating and studying. And the mind is just intractable sometimes, and then all of a sudden it just settles. But you know, to pay attention to the reflection on what is the nature of experience, and what is the nature of the grasping, the clinging, because that's more the problem than do we get what we want, and that's you know, it's so important to realize that the Buddha is giving us this practice of training, of leading us out of suffering, out of limitation, to a place of freedom. So to be able to be attending to that, like there's a teaching that the Buddha gives. It actually comes up in many places in the suttas, when in terms of samadhi, of concentration, or, you know, samadhi, immersion of the mind, and the settling of the mind, peacefulness of the mind. But and bhikkhus, what is the faculty of concentration, of samadhi? And he said it is gaining the, you know, so when a bhikkhu gains the concentration of the mind, the unification of the mind with release as its object, this is the faculty of concentration. And so it's really, you know, paying attention to what we're, because the mind, we're picking up things as its object anyway. And it's just this, it's the way the mind works, the way it functions, and how do we apply the mind, so that paying attention to taking the object as the object of release, and the word the Buddha uses for release, or that's translated as release, is wosaka, and wosaka is release, relinquishment, letting go, giving up, and being ready to relinquish, to let go, letting go as the object. And that's just so important. I mean, again, it's sort of well-known quote of Lumpa Cha, and say, you let go a little, you get a little peace. You let go a lot, you get a lot of peace. You let go completely, you get complete peace. Mm-hmm. It's just this, how much are we willing to let go? How much are we willing to relinquish? How much are we willing to release? And so that sense of, you know, paying attention to relinquishment, to release. And in the, you know, as we practice, as we train, as we cultivate, it's not that we don't put forth effort. It's not that we don't have a diligence with the practice, but it's having the attitude that is aligns itself with Dhamma, so that sense of having, you know, the release of greed, hatred, delusion. Mm-hmm. Are we willing to let go of our inclinations and fascination with gratification? I need this, I want this, I have to have this. And whether it's a material thing out in the world, or whether it's a mental state. I've got to get my samadhi. I have to have my quiet and my peace. I have to, you know, get out of my face, and get away from me. you're obstructing my samadhi. And just, you know, we go through these phases, and just, but is, you know, that's not release. And so keeping release as the object, and there's places where the Buddha it's in the commentary when explaining that having release as the object is having, you know, having Nibbana as the object, you know, taking freedom from suffering as the object of attention. And oftentimes, it's a bit exalted. So we shrink back, but the reality is, you know, stepping into that willingness to relinquish, to let go, to release our identification with ourselves. Me, this is who I am. I'm just a hopeless practitioner who will never make it. I'm a limited human being who will never get peaceful. So it's just, you know, how many obstacles do we create for ourselves and aren't willing to release, relinquish? And it's just to pay attention. You know, those voices that we hear in our mind, and, you know, treating them with kindness. Because I, you know, even the release is not kind of smashing and annihilating and getting rid of. It's the kindest thing to do is just relinquishing, like relinquishing ill will, aversion, irritation, and that sense of recognizing this is an obstacle. This is not for my own benefit. It's not for others' benefit. It's worthy of relinquishment and letting go. And so just to pay attention to this, taking release as the object. This is the way to bring the mind to a place of being settled and clear and still. And there's different ways of, you know, you say encouraging the mind, just like that, just taking the ending of suffering, of dukkha, of discontent, dis-ease, dissatisfaction, being willing to release that. We're just reflecting from a place of just the impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, changingness of the conditions of the world. You know, do we have to really keep chasing after all of the things of the world and trying to make it stable and certain and sure? This, can we be at ease with the inherent instability and uncertainty of the world around us? It's just so much peace to be had when we're willing to release that feeling of, and the need to keep things stable and certain, and the inherent dukkha, unsatisfactory nature of things. It's just being in an imperfect world with imperfect people and an imperfect me. This is the nature of it. It's like recently I just heard a quote from a poem by W.H. Auden. He's saying, you know, love your crooked neighbor with your crooked self. This is the kind of the reality of the existence that we live in. This is the Buddha. It's a realm of dukkha. It doesn't mean it's not a place of freedom and peace and a liberation, but it isn't that peace and freedom and liberation are not accessible to those who wish it to be perfect, and that is this sense of recognizing the inherent unsatisfactory nature of things, and within that, being able to respond with, and this is where the response of kindness and compassion and generosity really comes from is when there is an acceptance of the limitations that are there, and that the most noble response to oneself and to others is out of of generosity and kindness, that sense of compassion and pure-hearted response that is, and that's accessible when we're willing to release and relinquish our cravings, our desires, our irritations, and our delusions. So relinquishing the greed, hatred, delusion, seeing the anicca, dukkha, anatta, that sense of this is not me, not mine, this is not myself. There's nothing that we can be holding on to that we can claim ownership of, and whether it's, say again, of the external world or of the internal world. All of our thoughts, feelings, emotions, they keep changing. They keep popping up like bubbles, and we experience them, and then we get excited about some, and we get flustered by others, and we keep spinning, and there isn't any peace there. And it's just, how do we release? How do we relinquish? Letting go. And so making that the object, and recognizing that these are, there's fundamental truths of the human realm, and it's the clarity of seeing that is its place of freedom. And so that coming back to that quality of knowing clearly, just that simple act of being mindful, simple act of being, bringing awareness. And so it's in the quality of mindfulness, in the quality of awareness that is, that has release as its object, that is where there is a place of freedom. And so that always returning to that knowing, that all of the resolution of our practice and ease of practice is in this returning to the quality of knowing, and having a steadiness of awareness that is just in inherent in the nature of the mind itself, and that we get confused by or tangled up in the moods and the impressions of the mind and the reactivity and just proliferations that are part and parcel of the mind, but that's just when they're held with attachment and clinging and projection, they have no end. Whereas it's the whole point of having release as the object is that this is where there is a place of ending, an abiding place with the ending of dukkha, place of peace within that. So it's, and that this quality of wosaka is really an important quality to be reflecting on and bracketing one's practice. In that sense, yes, we do walking meditation, sitting meditation, cultivation of mindfulness in our day-to-day life, keep our precepts, pay attention to the details of the various duties that we have, but the keeping release as the object, not getting sidetracked into the reactions and to the world around us. And the world around us is also, just ourselves. That's the biggest distraction. This quality of wosaka is something that, it comes up in different discourses and different applications, where in this one it's sort of a faculty of concentration, but it's also there's a bigger set of teachings that the Buddha gives of developing, you know, developing the faculties, developing the powers, developing the Eightfold Path, developing the seven factors of awakening, different aspects of this path, and having viveka, viraga, nirodha, wosaka, having seclusion, dispassion, cessation, and release, relinquishment, so that having these are attitudes of mind. And we incline the mind to seclusion or a sense of a non-entanglement, turning the mind to dispassion, in the sense of just letting things fade away. That's an alternate translation of the word viraka. Dispassion is quite direct, but it's also fading away, letting things fade away, because everything is fading away anyway. It's just is the nature of things, but we tend to stoke the fire of their getting excited about them or they're fading away, and we go back and chew on them and give them life again. Nursing one's wrath, keeping it going. Let it feed away. Cessation in the sense of ending, the natural ending of things, but also that non-arising is another alternate translation for that. So just paying attention to, because sometimes we spend our time chasing after the, say, mental states and trying to stamp out our greed, hatred, delusion, stamp out our proliferations and our... can we just settle and pay attention to its non-arising? This is another way of holding it that we tend to overlook. And then these are ways of holding, investigating, framing our practice and framing our perception of the training, so that there's a making this the fruits of the practice accessible. So again, the sense of taking release and relinquishment as the basis of how we frame what we're trying to do. How do we hold our practice, as opposed to achieving, attaining, getting, gaining? And the mind becomes instantly peaceful, or at least mine does. So I'll offer that for reflection this evening.